Good evening. You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we are talking with Ethan Stout. Ethan is someone who is behind the project MyRedRobe.com. He's an administrator for the project, and that's an outreach project of someone who we've had on the show before, Bobby Binford. Bobby is someone who's incarcerated in Washington State and has started this nonprofit to help Native youth, especially Native youth who might be in some kind of trouble. But I will find out more about that in just a minute. I want to talk to Ethan, and we'll find out what's going on with that. Ethan, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. So, Ethan, let's start first by talking about MyRedRobe.com. Can you tell me what is that?
So, basically, it's just the startup for the nonprofit organization that Bob Binford had started. The nonprofit itself is named Youth of Incarcerated Native Parents and Diverse Family. And basically, it's just like our prison system has disconnected the youth from their parents. And I mean, there's a lot of, especially now during the COVID-19, there's not really any way for them to connect or anything like that. And so the idea behind this whole project is to kind of raise funds for kids to be able to do like video visits or, you know, be able to associate with other people or other children going through the same kind of hardship of dealing with a parent that's incarcerated and don't really know, you know, like it's kind of a hard thing to talk about. And it's just kind of an alienating thing to go through. And that's pretty much what the idea behind My Red Road is like right now we're in the process of getting our federal tax ID number. We already got the state tax ID number. And once we get the federal tax ID number, then we can move forward to generating donations and hopefully starting to build kind of like events and stuff that kids can go interact with one another that are going through the same kind of thing. So they can, you know, build kind of a group where they know other people that they can reach out to when they're, you know, dad's in prison and I need somebody to talk to and nobody else really understands what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm. Could we talk a little bit about Bobby Binford first? Who is he? And, you know, what's his story?
So Bob's been incarcerated for, I believe, 48 years. He's got, I think, 6 life sentences. He's been locked up for a really long time. So, I mean, when he first got locked up, yeah, he was going through a lot and he wasn't, you know, the greatest person in the world. But since then, I mean, I only knew Bob for about like the last 4 months of my prison sentence. And he was somebody that was very influential on me, and he wants to help everybody. Like, he wants to do everything he can to build everybody up and make everybody more secure in, you know, our lives right now. And, like, that's one of the things that was going on in prison is there's the big political system going on, you know, the whites, the blacks, the natives, and everything. And it's kind of become more of an animalistic thing. And I mean, Bob was one of the few people that I was able to connect with that understood it from the perspective, like, you know, we need to focus on our spiritual traditions. We need to go, you know, go to sweats and everything. We need to focus on who we are as a people so we can not lose sight of that while we're incarcerated. And that's kind of, you know, he's just a really cool guy. He's just really influential on a lot of people. And I mean, right now he's working towards getting, clemency to get released from prison. I mean, I believe that he completely and totally deserves it. I mean, he's not the same person that he was 48 years ago. And I mean, he's done nothing now. Like, he hasn't gotten infractions. He hasn't gotten in trouble. He's just a really good old guy. And I mean, he doesn't got much life left as it is. I mean, why not let him live it on the outside?
When I had a chance to interview Bobby Binford and to speak with him, I was so impressed at his authentic way of telling his story, and also the way in which he really honored and upheld his Native American tradition as an important source of spiritual grounding during his experience with incarceration. I was so impressed with so many things that Bobby had to say. I could tell that he's a very authentic and genuine person who has so much to share. And I see that, you know, by helping to create this foundation, he really has positive intentions to help Native youth who might be suffering and feeling that disconnection by a parent or a loved one who's in prison. So Bobby Binford is, he's Native then. Do you know, like, what his tradition is, like, where he comes out of, like, or does that matter?
I'm not really sure, but I know, like, most of the traditions, like, in prison that they follow by is more like the coastal tribes or the Native or the Plains tribes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's most of the traditions. Like, when we do, like, the sweat and everything, it's kind of based around that kind of cultural influence.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I mean,
sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, okay. In prison, I mean, it kind of everybody, we kind of just like, it doesn't matter where we're from, we kind of just become like, they call it a hoop. I mean, we're all part of one circle and we're doing what we can to support one another and build each other up. And, you know, we're looking out for one another. And I mean, so in a way, I mean, it doesn't really matter what your previous, you know, cultural influence was. Once you're in there, I mean, you're part of a completely different culture. And I mean, that's in a way that, I mean, they kind of become your family in a way.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. For people who may be listening who aren't familiar with what a sweat is, can you describe what a sweat is and how, you know, I mean, what do you do?
So basically the sweat is like, it's your connection with Mother Earth. And I mean, we have a little lodge that we build up and we have, I mean, there's just like rocks that we call them grandfather, like our elders and stuff. Cause I mean, like they're oldest part of our history, our tradition. And then they get nice and hot and then we say prayers and then we get a bunch of people up inside the hut and then we pour some medicine water and onto the rocks and then it gets nice and steamy in there and really hot. And then, I mean, we have to suffer and like a lot of times it gets really hot. And then, I mean, sometimes you really don't want to be in there, but I mean, you're suffering, you're letting go of the pains, the things that are holding you down. And I mean, like, especially in prison, that was one of the really good places where you could kind of let go of everything. And it's just a way for you to connect with your ancestors, with your tradition in general. And I mean, stay connected with the people around you. And I mean, sometimes people just need somewhere to be able to like talk or, you know, like cry or, you know, just let some of that stuff out. And I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, you're just letting it all go right there.
So when I talked to Bobby, he talked about the role that he played in helping to revitalize that tradition at the institution that he was incarcerated at. And he talked about the importance of Native folks being able to gather in community and to have the sweat because it's an essential part of your spiritual practice. So he said that during COVID, there hasn't been the opportunity to do the sweats. And he says that he's really missing it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of practices in general that they try and withhold from the Native community in there. I mean, when I was in the minimum security unit, we weren't allowed to do our smudging or anything like that, you know, like, that's something that we like to do every day, you know, kind of get rid of the day's bad energies, you know, say our prayers, let it go up with the smoke to the heavens and all that. And I mean, they always had an excuse as to why we weren't allowed to do that. And I mean, even now, like the sweat lodge, I mean, it gets really hot in there and it's going to get rid of majority of anything bad. I mean, we go in there to get rid of the impurities. And honestly, it just seems like they're looking for any reason they can just to withhold the culture from the people.
So Native folks are incarcerated at a proportionally higher rate than the actual number of Native folks, like within the, you know, within the authoritarian dominant U.S. culture. What do you think are some of the factors that lead to Native incarceration? What things are lacking that aren't available to Native folks that help lead them to a path of incarceration?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the way, like, I mean, the reservations are pretty bad as it is. I mean, the way, it's just, they're alienated. I mean, a lot of people just don't see Native Americans as a normal kind of person. I mean, they don't understand the interconnectedness with one another. And I feel like that kind of adds on to the disconnect from society and pushes them away into, you know, trying to seek other ways of finding themselves. And I mean, a lot of times, you know, like where I grew up in Omak on the Caldwell Res, and there's a lot of people that end up into gangs and stuff like that because they don't have that family. They don't have that kind of connectedness with the culture anymore. And I mean, I feel in a way, I mean, that is kind of a big reason why a lot of people end up incarcerated there in the Native tradition. I mean, we lose sight of who we are as a people, and it leads us down dark roads.
What do you think white people need to know? What do white people need to do to help correct some of the historical injustices toward Native folks and to support Native folks in, like, finding alternatives to the paths that lead to incarceration? What do white folks and what does America need to do for Native Americans?
I mean, I'm not really too sure. I mean, like, honestly, I think they just need to embrace the culture more. And I mean, there's a lot of people that still focus on the past and everything. Oh, Natives did this wrong. You know, this isn't your land or whatever. I mean, we gave up a lot just to be here and to let everybody else be here. And we're sharing everything with everybody else. But a lot of people are still, you know, like, especially the white folk, they don't care about nature. They don't care about their spirituality as much. And I mean, they disrespect Earth as it is. I mean, that's one of the big things. I mean, we need to learn how to respect Earth. And once we learn how to respect the land that we're a part of, then we can learn to respect one another. And I mean, if we can find that, I mean, it wouldn't matter whether we're white, black, Native, or anything like that. We could all be one people, one tribe. And I mean, I feel like that's one of the big deals right now.
Thank you so much. We are talking with Ethan Stout tonight. Ethan Stout is someone who's helping to put together the nonprofit project, which is online. You can find it at myredroad.com. And it's a project that was started by Bobby Binford. Bobby Binford is a Native American activist who is incarcerated in the state of Washington and advocates for both the acceptance and practice of Native American spirituality within incarceration as a way of supporting Native folks, and has also started this foundation to support Native youth who may have loved ones in prison. So let's talk about My Red Road a little bit. Did you personally, Ethan, have any experience with loved ones who were trying to come to you while you were incarcerated, or did you have that experience yourself of knowing a Native youth who lost connections with loved ones because of incarceration?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, like, even since I've been out, there's people that I know they're still incarcerated, and it's really hard. I mean, just a simple phone call while you're in prison is extremely expensive, and I mean, you're trying to just get by while you're in there. I mean, they don't feed you enough and stuff like that. So, I mean, just having the money to be able to connect with one another like that. And I mean, growing up too, I mean, you see a lot of kids with their parents, and I mean, I guess that is a big contributor as well to why a lot of Native Americans end up in going down the bad roads, is because they don't have that family, that they don't have that father figure in their life, because they're locked away for one reason or another, and maybe they don't have the ability to connect with them. So I mean, it's a big influence. I mean, yeah, I've seen a lot of it where there's just a big disconnect between the families.
Mm-hmm. So you were mentioning that one of the obstacles that Native youth have in terms of connecting with their loved ones who are in prison is the folks who are in prison want to make a call. They just want to call somebody that they love and care about and check in on them and see how they're doing. How much does a call like that cost for someone who's in prison? Like, say, just to talk for a little while. Is it, like, free?
No.
Mm-hmm.
So for, like, a 20-minute phone call, you're looking at about $2.50.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, in comparison, like, if you have a job in prison, like, I had a job and I was making 43 cents an hour. So, I mean, you're looking at hours upon hours just to be able to make one phone call. And then, I mean, in the system here, they also have a problem with being able to, like, so, like, if I have a job while I'm in prison, I can't take the money from my books and then put it onto my phone system. I'd have to have somebody from the outside able to put the money on my phone account. And, I mean, that's kind of the big deal, too, is, I mean, you have to have people on the outside or else you're just kind of lost.
Mm-hmm. So people who are incarcerated and want to talk with their loved ones have to work for 4 or 5 hours just to even be able to make enough money to make one 20-minute phone call. And those connections that folks have with the outside world are, like, essential to surviving while you're inside, because doing time is really hard. So that's, like, just one example. That's one small example of how the system makes it really difficult for Native folks to connect with, like, with youth. And I'm sure that, like, when you're incarcerated, if you're a dad or if you're some kind of a family figure, you want to provide a good role model to your kids or to your loved ones while you're incarcerated. And how can you do that if you can't even make a phone call to talk to them?
Exactly.
Yeah. What are some other ways in which, like, if Native youth are able to connect with their dads or with people that they love, what are some of the other ways in which that can have a really positive influence on their lives?
I mean, just having that person to talk to, I mean, it's hard enough as it is in the world we live in right now with the disconnect from the interpersonal communications to be able to actually, like, talk to somebody on a really personal level. And I mean, your dad or your mom, you know, those are people that are supposed to give you guidance. They're supposed to tell you, you know, when you're lost in life and you're supposed to figure out what the next step in life is, those are the people that are supposed to guide you. And if you don't have the ability to even have that conversation with them, how are you going to know what to do with your next step?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Another thing that I've noticed about incarceration, I don't know if it's the same in Washington, but I know that in Oregon, they tend to put a lot of the prisons way out in the high desert area. So, like, in Oregon, they stick it out near Pendleton or out by Baker City or out by Ontario. So when people get arrested and when they get incarcerated, oftentimes they ship them someplace that's, like, hundreds of miles. It could literally be hundreds of miles away from their families. And so if you're a child and you want to visit your dad who's in prison, you have to, like, your family has to drive you, like, sometimes maybe 200 or 300 miles just to see your loved one. And right now you can't even do that. Is that something that Native folks who are incarcerated in Washington State have to face? Like, do they have long drives from the reservation or from Seattle or Spokane to go see a loved one who's in prison? Do they move the prisons far away from them?
Most definitely. I mean, when I was when I got incarcerated, I was trying to go to Airway Heights, which is in Spokane, because it was only a couple, like, maybe 2 hours away from my family, and they don't care about that. They don't care about that when they're incarcerating you. They just, you know, they want to throw you somewhere. And I mean, they ended up putting me in Washington State Penitentiary, which is, you know, 6-7 hours away from my family. And the entirety of my incarceration, there was no way for my family to come visit me because it's expensive just to go that far. And I mean, what are you going to do with the kids while you're, you know, going and visiting your son in prison and stuff like that? And it's just, yeah, it's just crazy that they don't care about the people themselves. We're just objects to them.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the goals of myredroad.com? What are some of the goals of the can you say again the name of the nonprofit that you're helping start?
Youth of Incarcerated Native Parents and Diverse Families.
Thank you. What are some of the goals of that nonprofit? Is it to help provide money for for folks who for Native youth who need support to go visit their family? Is it to provide tutoring or some sort of connection with the? Can you just tell me what are some of the goals of the nonprofit?
I mean, a big part of it is being able to provide the kids with like the connection with their parents. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't have the money to put on their parents' account to be able to have that conversation and stuff. I mean, generating some sort of income where we could be able to provide like even like a 20-minute phone call to somebody, like 20 kids a week would be really cool. And then like you can do video visits and stuff like that. I mean, that costs money as well. And a lot of kids don't have access to a computer per se. So we're trying to generate money where we can get donations to, get computers and stuff. So like kids that are, stuck out in the middle of nowhere that don't have any way to, drive those hundreds of miles and at least be able to see their dad face to face on a video visit or something like that. And then, I mean, there's a lot of, when dad's in prison, that's a big portion of the income for the whole entire family. So, I mean, being able to put like you were saying, like some sort of educational influence in there. Like we were talking about while I was in prison with Bob about doing like camps during the summer and stuff where, they can learn cool things that, dad would be teaching them. I'm going to go teach them how to make a bow, go teach them how to go fishing, being able to do that stuff with other people and getting that kind of structure while you're growing up that you don't have because your parents incarcerated. I mean, that's kind of the whole focus of the nonprofit is just trying to provide that structure that the prison system has stolen from our youth and from many people overall.
Thank you. It's also pretty, it's pretty well understood within like the community of folks who advocate for people who are incarcerated and for people once they've come out, that if they don't have access to good education, to good role models, and to like things within their community that they can find meaning in, it's often very common for Native youth, as well as people of color and white folks too, to end up following in the same kind of path as their parents who are incarcerated. And it's not of any fault of their own. It's the system creates this incredible hole in their lives by making it so difficult for youth to connect with their parents and with their father figures. And so a lot of times they end up in gangs or they end up like, kind of going the wrong way. And it's because they don't have that connection, that essential connection that is really needed in order to make good choices in life. Is that also part of the goal of my Red Road?
Yes, re-educating and trying to curb the same paths that we've had over and over again. And I mean, part of that influence, I mean, like you're saying that they end up following in the footsteps of their parents and everything. I mean, that's, like that comes back to the whole communication thing. If dad's not able to tell you, hey, I screwed up, I made really bad decisions and I don't want you to follow in my footsteps, how are they going to know any different?
Mm-hmm. So tell me about when you and Bobby Benford met. It must have had a really strong impact on you to like, now that you're out, you're working with Bobby, even though he's incarcerated, he has 6 life sentences, but it sounds like he is a person who has a vision and who has a focus for Native youth and for Native folks who are incarcerated to support them. He must have had a strong vision you only knew him for 4 months, but in that 4 months, he like had so much of an impression on you that once you got out, you're willing to, do this important work to help start a nonprofit. What was it like working with Bobby in the 4 months that you knew him?
I mean, it was really refreshing, honestly. I mean, a lot of people don't really have focus on, a lot of people in prison, they just see, oh, hey, my release date's coming up. I wonder when I'm going to be back. And I mean, they're not focused on helping one another grow as a person or trying to better themselves. I mean, a lot of people end up getting caught up in the system, and a lot of, I mean, they call it being institutionalized, where they don't see past the prison gates. They just see that this is where I'm going to be for the rest of my life, and this is just the way it is. And I mean, the whole entire prison sentence that I was in there, that was one thing that I wanted to do. I'd see all these people struggling, and I wanted to do something, anything that I could do to try and change the system to help benefit these people, so they're not just seeing this as the end of their road. And when I met Bob, he was one of the few people that I'd met while I was in there that had that kind of same vision, that he didn't just see, like, he'd been in there for a really long time. And I mean, even though he's been crushed down by the system, he's been pushed around, he's been beaten, he still wanted to do everything he could to better everybody else. He was one of the first people, when I got sent to medium security, he was one of the first people to walk up to me and, you know, say, hey, I know you're Native. I'm going to say, you know, you're part of our family and whatever you need. Like, I didn't have any, like, I mean, eating in there is kind of a hard thing to do. I mean, they have really crappy food in there. And, you know, he doesn't have much as it is. And he was willing to, you know, give me some of his soups and stuff, like just trying to help me out. And then, like, you know, I'm stressing out a lot and stuff. And like, one of the things that I really connected with was beadwork. And he was, you know, he busted out his beadwork stuff. He gave me a bunch of beads, gave me a needle, a bunch of thread, and gave me some patterns. And he's like, you know, I know you're stressing out. You need to stay focused on this. You don't need not to get caught up on everything that's stressing you out. So, you know, he was kind of that figure in there that kind of was like, you know, I can see that you're struggling, and I'm going to be here, and I'm going to help you figure out where you're going to go from here. And he had that same vision as I did. I wanted to do something to change the way the system was treating all these people and, you know, disconnecting everybody from one another. And he wanted to bring that back too.
Ethan, it's been a real pleasure talking with you. If people want to find out more about myredroad.com.
There's a contact me page on the website, and it has my personal email address and, has the contact information. If you want to shoot Bob a letter or anything like that, you can get a hold of Bob that way. But besides that, I mean, the website's kind of the sole focus.
It's getting started right now.
Yeah.
Well, it has a lot of vision behind it, and I'm sure it's going to go far. So, especially with you and Bobby working on it, that sounds like a really great project. So, thank you so much, Ethan, for being on Prison Pipeline tonight.